334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive at espnau.com.
Hello, everybody. Welcome in to the Tuesday edition of The Drive. Nice looking Tuesday. It's warmed up a good bit, dried out. Welcome in as we've got the regular grouping here in the studio, which is very rare. Bill, Dan, and Drew. It's during basketball season with Dan on the road as much as he is. It's not very often that we just have the three of us here in the studio.
Well, I missed a couple of and the holidays threw us right off as well at the beginning of the month. It's great to be here. Hope you guys are doing well. The road trips can sometimes, especially later in the week, make it tough for me to make all these. But it's great to be here when I can be here, and with a road trip starting tomorrow, I'll be out the rest of the week. But great to be here, especially after that big game on Saturday, to be able to break down Auburn, Tennessee, and get folks ready for a big road game tomorrow night. Bruce Pearl was talking about it earlier, when the Tigers go anywhere in conference, they can expect a real battle.
Yeah, and it's another situation. If they're Auburn fans, we talked about it a little yesterday. If there's some Auburn fans in the Baton Rouge area, you should be able to get in. It should be easier to find tickets than it is right here at Auburn. So, and again, I'll reiterate what I said yesterday. That I like the fact that Auburn gets the extra day. I mean, with Jahni Broom coming back and playing 33 minutes after missing a week, the SEC Player of the Week getting a little extra time to try to, you know, rehab, rest a little bit, as does the entire Auburn team. We've got three games on tap tonight before Auburn gets – Auburn really opens things up tomorrow night for the SEC action on a Wednesday. So we'll look at the games from tonight and tomorrow. If we get a chance, we'll let you hear some Bruce Pearl from today. I didn't get a chance to get over there. It was another grandparenting opportunity today. So I take advantage of those every time we can. So, but I didn't get a chance to get over and hear Bruce. So I wouldn't mind hearing what all he had to say. We'll see if we can let you hear that as well. Remember, we had Andy Burcham on yesterday. So Andy is right now. I believe they're either boarding or taking off on their way to Baton Rouge. So we had Andy on yesterday's show. So no Andy here in hour number one. So we're wide open as far as the phones are concerned. You can give us a call on the Drive hotline, 334-321-1390.
You can also text the show, 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors, and they also sponsor the podcast, available wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, we should have our regular Tuesday 5 o'clock guest, though. Jake Crane of Crane & Company will join us at the bottom of hour number two. But until then, we're wide open. So we'd love for you to join in. Anything on your mind sports-wise? Yesterday, I was trying to find the info that had come out over the weekend, but Auburn releasing that information today about three new additions to the football coaching staff. And we can talk about that as well. Remember now, there's no limit to the number of coaches you can have on your staff. There's only a limit to the number of coaches that can go on the road and recruit.
How concerned are you about tomorrow night for Auburn?
Coming
off a real physical game on Saturday.
And you've got a matchup against Ole Miss coming up on this Saturday.
Well, what do you think of tomorrow night? I'm concerned
every time you go on the road in this league. I know LSU has struggled, but they played Alabama really tough the other night in Tuscaloosa.
And near the bottom of the SEC this year could still mean, you know, you're a couple of marquee wins away from having a genuine tournament resume.
Right.
I think LSU was a bubble team the last time Lenardi looked at. He doesn't have them in the tournament, but LSU is a bubble team, I think, along with Arkansas, where it's like right now they wouldn't make it, but if they can win some of these games they've got between now and the end of the season, maybe they can, you know, maybe their resume will look a little bit different. And for LSU, tomorrow night is one of those games.
Oh, absolutely. Like
if you're LSU, this could be, if depending on how the rest of the season goes for LSU, tomorrow night could be the difference between making the NCAA tournament or not making the NCAA tournament. So, you know, I think Auburn's the better team. The numbers and the metrics would bear that out. But this is I think it has trap game potential because it's a very high stakes game for a home team that can change. I mean, I think it's similar to South Carolina in the way it could, mm-hmm. you know, the way a win like this could change the trajectory of the season for Matt McMahon. I mean, change the trajectory of Matt McMahon's tenure at LSU if he could pull it. You know, a home win over number one. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, it would be gigantic. And if you know the closer they get, the more, depending on what kind of LSU presence they have in the stadium that night. You were mentioning, you know, could be some Bruce Pearl witnesses.
Oh yeah,
in
well,
the
I
house
mean, you, yeah, them. you were mentioning yesterday that there were some tickets available for $4 yesterday.
Yeah, shockingly low. You know, especially if you're willing to sit, you know, in the top levels of the Pete. You know, you can get in for single digits on some of the third party services tomorrow night. But it's it's a scary game. I think it has a lot of classic sort of trap game characteristics.
Yeah, it obviously does. That's Andy was talking about that yesterday, and I agree. I mean, LSU's got some talent. You know, they've this is another game that Auburn, you know, doesn't need to have guys get in foul trouble down low, because I mean, I really wonder how Janai felt on Sunday. And Monday,
after playing
33 minutes.
See, I think that was the most physical game Auburn has played all season.
That sure seemed like it to me.
Yeah, so that's another reason I think you'd be a little bit concerned about what they look like in the following game because mm-hmm. they just played a game like that. I think it's also fair to wonder what Tennessee is going to. Tennessee's
at home. They've got Kentucky.
They've got Kentucky tonight.
Yes,
and that's a really interesting one. But it's. I think it's curious. I think it'll be interesting to see what Tennessee looks like after. I mean, I know they're a little more. The style's a little more familiar to them, mm-hmm. but they still played that same kind of game.
Yeah, if they were to lose, I've heard some people going, yeah, they like Kentucky here because mm-hmm. of that, just because of that. I mean, this is that stretch for Tennessee. You know, we've talked about every team seems to have that three game stretch where it's like, man, what a ridiculous schedule it is, but you know Tennessee's coming off the game at Auburn, and they've got Kentucky and Florida this week. Fortunately for them, both those games are at home. But this being the first game, and it being on short rest after that Saturday night game at Auburn, this could be an opportunity for Kentucky. Tennessee, surely, I mean, there's a chance that, and not a crazy chance that they're 5-4 here at the midway point of conference play.
This is a critical week for between the Auburn game that they already lost and now Kentucky and Florida. Like this is a critical week for Tennessee's chances of winning the conference in the regular season. I still think they'll be fine as a tournament team.
Sure,
you know, they go in tonight at 17-3. I think they could win tonight against Kentucky. That one feels like. Maybe even more of a clash of styles than Auburn, Tennessee, right?
Yeah.
As far as the way Kentucky mm-hmm. has, you know, the style they've taken to under Mark Pope, and the way that Tennessee, they want to play with brass knuckles, you know, on their hands.
Tennessee doesn't mind extending the clock for 30 seconds on offense, and they want to make you, you know, they want to make you have to get deep into the clock. I mean, they love that. I mean,
but to me, the battle in Tennessee versus Kentucky is going to be the way Kentucky wants to shoot from the perimeter versus the way Tennessee closes out.
Yeah.
On the perimeter, like what kind of looks?
Tennessee is by far the best.
What kind of looks?
Three-point team.
What kind of looks will Kentucky get around the 3-point line against a team like Tennessee, and can they convert?
Yeah. Well, I mean, what may be very important is early on, like we said the other night, I thought Auburn got some pretty good looks early In the first 5 minutes, I thought they had three or four really good looks from three, and they couldn't hit any of them. And then Tennessee was even more aggressive after that. You know, I wonder if they hit a couple early. I don't know. I mean,
you just, there's so much pressure, and I know Auburn's still able to win. There's so much, although I think the last sequence for Auburn, the game winner, proves it. You have to.
Shooters got to keep shooting.
But you have to convert your good looks when you get them, because you don't get that many of them against Tennessee.
No, and that one, and the last one by Miles definitely was one of the best looks Auburn had after the first few minutes of the ball game. So we'll talk about those. Anything on your mind, sports wise? It is the week in between. It's Senior Bowl week, the week in between here from the conference title games to the Super Bowl, and I mean it's pretty much college basketball. We've got, you know, we're about to get the diamond action, softball and baseball underway, but it's going to be a little while. So right now, it is pretty much, it's basketball time. There's not a whole lot of other, you know, big news going on. Hot stove league baseball.
There's a pretty,
getting ready for the start of a
pretty big NFL game coming up.
Well, I said, but it's the week in
between.
I know
it's the bye week. I mean, it's you know what I mean. Did they always do the Pro Bowl, or was that?
Yes. Yeah. Always had the Pro Bowl. And like I said, it's Senior Bowl week. As far as I'm concerned, I mean, I really. I'm not that excited about what the whatever the Pro Bowl activities are.
I mean, even
days,
but even
flag and, when, but
even before they changed it to a flag football game, you didn't care that much about.
No, you're right.
No, so it is a, yeah, I think it's a prime college basketball sort of week, and certainly the college football news takes a backseat until you get mm-hmm. to,
yeah, because at this time of year, unless there's a coaching, you know, unless there's a coaching,
and there is there's some familiar names that are you know getting, I mean most of the and most of the NFL jobs have filled up as well, which you know slows things down, I think, from a carousel standpoint. Zach Etheridge, I believe, is it Miami?
Expected to. I have not seen that.
I think that's something going on. You know, Miami looking to add Zach Etheridge potentially to their staff down in Coral Gables. So I mean, there's still you'll see a name or two pop up that would be a he's
nice addition.
Zach's at Houston right now, but could be jumping to the ACC at a pretty prominent. Spot, but you haven't seen much Auburn news since the last big stuff.
No, like I said, I mean we'll talk here. We'll go after the first break or so. We'll talk about the three new additions to the football staff, and they make a lot of sense when you look at them. But yes, it's crazy because this is the time. That's the time, Dan. Used to be about. I mean, there was so much going on. Because we were approaching the signing period, you know, we're a week away from what the NCAA and what is still called National Signing Day. There are hardly any players left out there that are very highly touted who are unsigned.
Although people lamented the signing period being when it was, right? Like there was a desire for. You know, an early signing period and maybe even a much earlier signing period to sort of take some of the.
Well, they got because it was so much. Mm-hmm. I mean, the thing is, as far
like
as
why did it change? When was it? When did it move from?
It changed because you had more and more players graduating early, wanting to graduate, and then they the NCAA needed something to just keep players from just enrolling. I mean, they wanted players to go ahead and be able to sign and then enroll. That was one of the reasons. The SEC used to have an early signing period. They had a signing period like the second Wednesday of December for years. But the problem with that was other conferences would just wait and see who signed and see if they could steal some of those players away from maybe the lesser schools in the league.
Were December and January really hectic periods for...
Yeah, December, I mean, that's one of the problems with it right now, is there's so much going on in December, and now that you've added the transfer portal, but, I mean, December was always the time where if your team was good enough to be in a bowl game, you know, you were worrying about that.
Yeah, I always understood it as coaches wanted to be able to lock up their recruits in early December so that they wouldn't have to worry about, or at least mid-December, you know, whenever it is. It's like, you know, get something permanent then so that you can focus on other stuff in December, January. But
what are you really focusing on in February, in early February?
It's true. I mean,
that's the reason.
I guess you're getting ready for spring break. I guess.
But I mean, with so many
Was it with players in mind? Sort of the
probably was, and I mean, you weren't thinking about early graduates. That wasn't very common years ago. But I mean, with so many players able to finish early and enroll at midterm, mid-year, you know, at the first of the year, it is taken away from this. And I really, I guess it's fine to have the February signing period, but it's funny to me that it is the long period. It's from, you know, from February until the end of March. You basically got 2 months for these players, and the majority of players, 90%+, and I believe it's 95%+ of teams' signees are signed in December, and you only have 48 hours. It starts Wednesday and it ends on Friday. It's odd to me that you have a 48-hour period where 90-something percent of the players sign, and then a 2-month period for the last few. I guess it gives you plenty of time to try to fine tune and do all your homework if you have any spots left.
On your initial point about the sports calendar, I mean, yeah, if you follow an NBA team or an NHL team, like, this is a, you know, the next few weeks are a really important part of of their season, you know, if they're going to make a playoff push or not, and if everybody can stay healthy, et cetera. The next month is huge for college basketball teams. Like, if you're on the bubble, if you're a team trying to close the deal on a championship season, or if you want to get back in position to win a championship, like the next 4, 6, 8 conference games are a huge part of it. You know, most of these leagues are about halfway done, you know, with league play.
Yeah, approaching, it'll be close to the midway point. I guess by middle of next week, by the end of next week, it'll definitely be halfway.
Auburn, Bama in Neville is the last game of the season. It's on the 8th.
Right.
It's on the 8th of, right, is it 8th or 9th? I think it's the 8th. Yeah, I think Saturday's the 8th. And then a week and a day later, right, we'll have the bracket.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's,
yeah, because, you know, the SEC tournament is that following week and wraps up, and the bids go out on Sunday.
Yeah, I mean, you can wait until, I know there are fans out there that sort of wait on college basketball until, you know, the last couple of weeks of the season or the tournament starts or something. But you watch a conference game now, especially with a contender involved, and it feels high stakes. You know, maybe they don't all feel like Auburn, Tennessee on Saturday night, but you can get. I mean, Iowa, Arizona, last night. Iowa State and Arizona last night, right? I mean,
Iowa State is so close to being perfect, but then things didn't go well after that mid-court plus buzzers.
Are you seeing some unlikely end of game stuff late? I mean, you think about the Houston Kansas game too, right? The one that was on right before Auburn with Houston down 6. Well, Kansas was up 6 at the free throw line, looking to close out Houston, and they missed the free throw, three pointer, and Houston ends up winning that game before that was the game. So Auburn, you were in the arena.
Yeah, I didn't get to see the end of that.
So check this out. So Auburn, Tennessee did not start on time.
Was that right?
On ESPN. Because Houston pulls off this unlikely comeback, stretches it to overtime. The first, 5-6 minutes of Auburn, Tennessee.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Are on news. The first few minutes of that game were on the news affiliate because they had to stick with they stayed with I think they may have delayed tip off for a couple of minutes too for this reason.
Like yeah, tip did seem a couple of minutes late.
So tips
I didn't really notice that as much.
So tips a couple of minutes late because Houston and Kansas are still playing in regulation when the Auburn game's supposed to start. ESPN has been very tight with the schedule. Like they do not give themselves.
No, they don't.
You know about you, and there was an uproar about that last night. Do you know? So that the Tiger Woods virtual golf.
Oh, I didn't see what happened.
It delayed the start of the Duke game on ESPN last night. I believe Duke NC State last night.
Yeah, because NC State was leading for quite a while.
Yeah, so that
I didn't realize. I mean, I didn't have to watch the beginning of that, so I didn't realize that had been delayed.
Some sports writers griping about that. This was different on Saturday night with Auburn, but
ESPN should know. I mean, they ought to go 2.5 hours between games.
But they want to, you know what I mean? They want to get as many games in as possible, and so yeah, and it sounded great on paper, I think, to have Houston, Kansas, leading into Auburn, Tennessee on ESPN. But with Houston, Kansas going into overtime that game, so the Auburn game did not start as regularly scheduled. But yeah, what a finish you got there, and what a finish you got last night with Arizona and Iowa State.
Yeah, no question. All right, we're just getting started, though. Nowhere near the finish yet. Love for you to join in. Give us a call on the Drive Hotline, 334-321-1390. Anything on your mind sports-wise as we are just underway here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with SPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. Again, we will talk with Jake Crane at the bottom of hour number two. So our phone lines are open until then, 334-321-1390. And we'll get to The Drive Hotline. And Jerry is up first. Hey, Jerry.
Hey, Jerry.
Hey guys. I was watching Houston and Kansas before the Auburn game, and that three-pointer that tied it up at the end of regulation was right at the – I mean, they had to look at it to make sure there was any time on the clock. And it went double overtime. And Houston ended up winning. But it delayed the game a good bit. They kept showing the score up in the corner of the screen.
That's, you know what? The Auburn has beaten a couple of really good teams this year. Tennessee, I think, might be the best team Auburn has beaten this year. It's up for debate, certainly. Iowa State is excellent. Houston's good enough to beat anybody.
Yeah, they're really good defensive team too. And I know during the broadcast, Jay Billis said that was the Auburn Tennessee game was the roughest game he had seen in 2 years.
It was. Yeah, we were talking about that a while ago, Jerry. I don't know that I've seen anything as physical as that, and especially with as few fouls called. Dan, you mentioned it yesterday. There were more called in the second half, but there were still, I think, 18 against Tennessee and 16 for 16 against Auburn. They could have easily called 30 fouls on each team.
Yeah, but I think Tennessee welcomes a physical game, yes. And Auburn has a group of guys that aren't going to back down from that kind of challenge.
Well, I have one more question too. Have you seen this new technology called MS-COM?
I have
it's
not.
It's a new way of watching sporting events. And the screen is like a whole wall of screens. Mm-hmm. And they've got cameras located in the stadiums at several different angles. And it's like sitting on the sideline, and they go from camera to camera, and they do all kind of events, soccer. They show the fight, and it's unbelievable. And they have a real nice restaurant to go along with it, and this ex-NFL football player has started this company, and But I saw a golfer the other day with the MSCOM logo on his shirt. So they got one in L.A. and one in Vegas.
So there's the thing. I think it's called COSM. And it's like, maybe that's what you're talking about with MSCOM. It's like kind of like the Sphere. Like, you know how they project, Bill, you know how they project sporting events? Like, I think there are places that have a screen similar to the setup at the Sphere, not exactly like it, but with sort of an immersive, the ability to have a more immersive opportunity, you know, the way to watch. I guess you're closer to the action and it's not the conventional TV broadcast. And yeah, I think that could, if the technology, reaches the right price point and the audience wants it, like, I think that could be something that really, really takes hold. I'm sure. I know the Sphere financials, it feels like every time I hear a news article about the money involved with the Sphere, they talk about what a loss it is financially, but everyone I know who's been there talks about how cool it is.
Yeah, you're not kidding. Everybody has just raved about it.
Yeah, I know some folks who went to like see Fish at the Sphere, the band, not the animal. But they, well, you know, and they said it was great. So
they're building one of these in Atlanta and one in Detroit too.
Well, I mean, if they're building them, then yeah, hopefully, Field of Dreams, right, Bill?
Yeah, if you build it, they'll come.
Yeah, it looks fantastic just on TV, but
I had not heard about that. I'm trying to find it. Yeah,
all right, see y'all later.
Appreciate it, Jerry. 334-321-1390. That is the Drive hotline as we are here on the Tuesday edition. We'll get to our bottom of the hour break. Come on in and join us.
And 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the Tuesday Drive. Bill and Dan, Drew at the controls. And anything on your mind sports-wise? I mentioned yesterday when we were talking with Brian, and I'd seen the news that Auburn was bringing in some more members for the football staff today. Officially announcing three additions, and they are guys. When you look at their backgrounds, it makes an awful lot of sense. Wayne Dorsey comes to Auburn after being the defensive line coach at Charlotte for the last couple of years, but before his time at Charlotte, he was defensive coach at St. Francis Academy in Baltimore for the past 5 years. Auburn really establishing that connection and looking to strengthen that connection with St. Francis, where they have three signees from there in this year's class, and the players that are already on campus, have a commitment from there for next year, looking to try to add the top edge prospect in the nation who's committed to Maryland. And Auburn's had he was one of the players in for Junior Day this past week. Dorsey is
and Auburn has recruited the D.C. Maryland area really strongly since
D.J. Durkin.
Well, not but Hugh Hugh Freeze at Liberty had to go into that
he
area.
He did, but I mean, just think about D.J. Durkin and his ties there at Maryland too, though.
Coach Freeze mentioned in the first crop when Auburn landed guys like Jalen McLeod. And they said, some of the D.C. area players that Auburn has recruited in years past, these were guys that they had an eye on as high school players when they were at Liberty. So yeah, I think it makes sense, and that's a if you can build pipelines there, some really good football players come out of that area, and it would if Auburn can stay competitive for some of these guys, it probably bodes well for the future.
Oh yeah. Now when I look at Wayne Dorsey's story, it reminds me. Let's see if you know the song I'm talking about. It says
"Lady Marmalade."
No. Okay, think of Baltimore. All right, he's from Baltimore, okay. and he was back in Baltimore coaching. He went to Mississippi Gulf Coast before he finished his career at Ole Miss. Does that bring anything to mind?
Okay,
there's a '70s song that I'm thinking of when.
Steve Earle?
No.
Because he's a Baltimore guy.
Well, but the song actually references
that's Copperhead Road.
The song references it's in reference to a girl. Say you went to Baltimore from Ole Miss, a class of 74 gold ring, is the line of the song. It's by
Steely Dan?
I believe it's the Starland Vocal Band.
Okay,
Moonlight Feels Bright.
I don't know Moonlight Feels Bright.
Oh,
okay.
Oh yeah, okay. But I mean, yeah, that's a line in the song. But I mean, yeah, so that's what Wayne Dorsey did. He went from Baltimore, finished his college career at Ole Miss before getting into coaching, and like I said, has been at Charlotte the last couple of years. Speaking of Ole Miss,
I want to say, I don't think Steve Earle's a terrible guest.
No, it's not.
Because he's a Baltimore guy who makes kind of country rock.
He does.
Copperhead Road's not a song from the 70s. But that's a good one.
It's 80s, though, isn't it?
It's an 80s. It's an 80s song, yeah.
But speaking of Ole Miss.
He's a fascinating guy. If you don't know much about Steve Earle, the different lives he's led over, including as an actor, you know, different stuff he's done is really cool.
Auburn gets another guy with Ole Miss ties in Michael Spurlock, who had a pretty good NFL career before starting coaching. He's been in the NFL with the Cowboys and the Packers. An analyst, I believe, at Ole Miss, and was at Southern Miss this past year as the running backs coach, and had been a receivers coach at Western Kentucky. So there's a guy with strong Southern ties, and so you've got a couple of and he'll probably I would imagine he would assist Derek Nix with the running backs. Dorsey, is expected to help Rock Bellantoni at the edge. And then another guy in definite DJ Durkin ties here is Antoine Richardson, who played for DJ Durkin at Maryland before he finished his career at Kent State. He was a high school coach in Florida, and he will be working with TJ Rushing in the secondary. So Auburn adding three more members. And like I said a while ago, these guys, you don't have to worry about are they analysts, are they whatever. They're assistant coaches now. I mean, there will just be 11 total coaches that can go on the road, but you don't have any limit to how many you can have now coaching the players in practice and on the sidelines.
And I don't think it seems like Coach Freeze is taking a lot of chances here as far as the guys. I mean, everyone seems pretty qualified. Great to have Rock back.
Absolutely.
I mean, we enjoyed our time with him.
Rock, and then Chad Lunsford, that was popular when he was here, back under Gene Chizik and Gus.
You know, I like the idea of a special teams coordinator having head coaching experience, because it seems like you're running several different aspects that aren't super related to one another, right? Between punt coverage and extra point kicking and kickoffs, you know, like there's a lot of different things. And I think someone with the administrative experience that they've been a D1 head coach, like that's a guy I would trust to know the value of all of those different aspects of the game and be able to organize and execute them effectively.
Yeah, you would sure think so. And he was that.
There's nothing
successful actually at Georgia Southern. 28-21, I believe, at Georgia Southern.
Yeah, there's nothing scientific, right, about what I have no idea if head coaches have a better track record as special teams coaches or not. But there's horse sense in that, right? Like,
yeah. Well, like, I mean, you understand the importance of it, but you also know where it fits in. And I mean, this is something he has a track record of being a special teams coach. But yes, I don't have a problem at all with having multiple guys who have been head coaches on your staff, and they can handle some of the things that maybe Hugh would have handled himself a few years ago. But now there's so much more on the plate of a head coach. So, again, like I said toward the end of the show yesterday, I mean, pieces seem to be in place. I mean, I like the staff, and the roster is definitely much improved. It's improved over a year ago, which was much improved over year one. this roster should be able to compete. And look, we saw they competed last year. Now, they've got to be able to compete and pull off some of those close competitions, which they weren't able to do as often as you would like a year ago.
Yeah, I was just thinking about Larry Porter the other day, who was...
Where is he now?
See, so he was Carolina's special teams coach this past season under Mac Brown. I don't know if he was retained by Coach Belichick, which would leave him sort of out there as a... I mean, we'll see what he wants to do, but I don't know if Larry Porter has resurfaced somewhere since exiting. I think he exited at North Carolina. I have not heard. I'll look into that. He was most recently at Carolina.
Yeah, I had not heard. I'm sure he was not. I mean, initially retained. So I mean, I had not heard anything about that since. But there still will be more coaching moves that'll be made. I don't know how many head coaching changes there will be from this. Are there any big openings right now? I'm trying to think of even coordinators.
I don't think the New Orleans Saints have hired a head coach yet. But I think other than that, you're looking at like your major coaching openings, especially at the college level. Like mm-hmm. I think it'd be tough to not have a offense coordinator or a or something similar right now.
Yeah, I mean I can't think of any that aren't filled right now, but I'm sure there'll still be some more changes between now and the fall. I mean, hey, we've got another portal window coming up in April, and there will be quite a few more players that are going to jump in when that comes up.
Did you mention when it happened, Cody Burns coming back to coming back to college football? Cody was on NFL staffs
right.
for the last couple of years, and I think it was late last month, happened during the holidays, that Cody got a co-offensive coordinator and assistant head coach, and I believe also he's coaching the receivers at South Florida. So he's with Alex Golesh, who he coached with at one of the NFL places. Or no, you know what? They might have been on the staff Tennessee. Together, they were there when Alex Golesh and Cody. So he's back with people he knows well. But a guy that I think, and I'd be curious to know if you disagree too much with this, Bill. Like I think a guy who's on the rise.
Oh, he's definitely. I think he's pretty much fast tracking.
Yeah,
he really is.
Like someone you should pay attention to, yep. And someone whose name is important and who's on the rise as a college football coach. And I wouldn't be too shocked if he's back in. Major conference college football as a offensive coordinator or even
things go well here.
Yeah,
that's the next step.
Yeah, or even someone who I guess I think the other move for Cody potentially would be if he is a candidate for mid-major head coaching jobs.
Mm-hmm.
Like I wonder if folks at the at the Sun Belt level or at the Conference USA level would look at Cody Burns if it goes well here at South Florida. Over the next season or two, could look at him potentially as a head coach at that level, and then he would be knocking on the door of we'll see, or maybe he wants to stay at the assistant level and could try to improve his position from South Florida to something else.
Yeah, I'd really
but a name to watch.
I wonder about how many guys now with the way college football has changed and the responsibilities that are now. There on the head coach, I wonder how many of the assistant coaches who've been in the business for a decade or so really want to jump in and take that head coaching responsibility now. I mean, it's an opportunity that would be really hard to turn down, and I'm sure a lot of these guys wanted to from the time they got into coaching to be a head coach. But I wonder under the circumstances that we have right now. If some of them might want to just wait and see if we do have something that actually can pull some of the things off the plate.
Yeah, but it does seem like it's tough to jump to the head coaching level at the major conference schools without some head coaching experience somewhere. And so that would be even if like you would understand, because we're seeing guys make moves like Kane Womack and even to an extent.
Yeah, from head coaches at the group of five to power five assistants.
Right.
Not even coordinators, but assistants.
Right. And I mean, now Chip Kelly's a different story because it felt like that was maybe sort of a mutual parting.
Yeah.
And he had a soft landing in that he could coach maybe college football's most talented offense as the coordinator, and he was also going to play for a guy who has a personal relationship, you know, with him from their time, you know, at New Hampshire, and you know, played for him, stuff like that. So I mean, they have a bond there that's kind of special. I just saw the Cody Burns news that he was coming back to college football in a prominent role with a colleague there at South Florida, and that's it's a guy that we worked with some doing the show, and I don't think we'll be too surprised if he's if he continues his rise as a coach.
No, I agree with that completely. All right, let's get to our final break of hour number one. Again, we'll play some Bruce Pearl audio for you if we have a chance, but we'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Come on in and join us here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive. The Drive. Part of The Drive. Call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Bill and Dan. Drew at the controls. We were doing a Where Are They Now during the break.
How about Pete Carroll? Getting the Raiders job, huh? You know,
and I said this the other day. I did not realize. I mean, he doesn't seem like he's going to be the oldest head coach in NFL history, because he's always seemed younger than his age. I mean, he's had the white hair, but I mean, he's always been in good shape and very active. And guys like George Halas and Tom Landry just seemed a lot older than Pete Carroll, but he's going to be the oldest coach in NFL history.
Would you be surprised to learn that Jim Harbaugh is like the third or fourth oldest coach in the NFL right now at 61?
No, I would not.
I mean, because that's I think another guy who exudes.
But he seems a whole lot younger than that, doesn't
he? Yeah, I mean, with Pete Carroll, mid 70s,
he'll be 74,
taking over the Vegas Raiders. A lot of USC fans in the Vegas metro who might still, you know, have fond memories of Pete's time down in L.A. And there's I think we talk about this on the air yesterday, the Tom Brady thing.
No,
that it's like it's strange that I guess
we talked about it off the air,
it's not the biggest, you know, it's not the end of the world or anything, but it's a clear conflict of interest, right? That there's a guy
of an NFL team who's is doing color on the broadcast.
And an owner who's like involved. Yes. Not like a 10% owner in name alone who's like got no influence in the organization, but an owner who seems to be involved in personnel decisions and deciding who the coach is going to be and stuff like that. Yeah, it's it wouldn't be allowed if it wasn't Tom Brady.
No, I agree with you 100%. I mean, you're not going to find. Yeah, let's let Jerry Jones just come in and do the color on a broadcast.
Yeah, I can't imagine her an active. I mean, it's one thing to have like an active coach of another, like when it's March Madness and they want to have a different head coach whose team didn't make it.
Yeah.
You know, onto the panel.
His team's out of the tournament for whatever. I mean, it was great. Let's face it. It was great for Auburn when Bruce Pearl was hired and he was there. It was a tremendous advertisement for Auburn to have Bruce Pearl there, but he had background doing it and his team wasn't in it.
Yeah, although I will say it's not the most tremendous thing, because you don't want competition for Bruce's services, right? You don't want him being so good.
He had just been hired then, so I mean,
because he could be. By the way, I've drawn that connection before, where that's they're one of the reasons their game day is coming to Auburn every year is because Bruce is phenomenal.
That's right.
On that show, and if I were ESPN and he were available. Right, like it would be.
They'd love to snap him back up.
It'd be a no-brainer at all to put him on that panel when he's done, if he wants to do that. But yeah, you don't want, you know, but it's It's great, but the Tom Brady thing feels very different, right? Than a guest commentator coming in who's an active.
It does, although there's some folks that would say, you know, Nick Saban still has an office in in Bryant Denny Stadium, and he's pretty prominent on ESPN. So I mean, I guess maybe there was a precedent.
maybe there is some precedent, Bill. How about that?
Yeah. All right, we're approaching the top of the hour, just about done with hour number one here on the Tuesday Drive. Don't forget, Jake Crane joins us at the bottom of the hour. We'll take a look at tonight's games around the SEC. We'll run some Bruce Pearl audio if we have the opportunity as well. But we're halfway done here on the Tuesday Drive.
The sports capital of Alabama. This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome into hour number two of the Tuesday Drive. Hope everybody doing well on this nice late January day. It's hard to believe the end of this week is the end of January of 2025. We're almost a month done in 2025.
Was it easier to believe after getting a historic snowstorm last week here in town? I mean, you get a memorable January, right?
That's usually when we get snow, it seems like it's in March.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, we don't usually get snow.
We had a single digit Christmas a couple of years ago. We had a week where it got really, really cold during the holiday season. But no, I think I compared it, Bill, and I was out of town for it. But remember back in the early 2000s, the 04 LSU game, classes were canceled all week because of Hurricane Ivan.
Yeah,
and it sort of created a different sort of anticipatory atmosphere for that game. I wonder if and the roads weren't shut down. You know, there were a lot of people without power.
Yeah, Auburn was fortunate. We talked about it last week. Auburn was fortunate they didn't have a game road or home last week, or what would have happened?
It would have been very difficult to play.
Would have been difficult to get anywhere to Tuesday, play a game, yeah. And it would have been awful. There's no way that folks would have been able to drive in to a ball game Tuesday or Wednesday night.
Oh, I think a Tuesday or Wednesday night game would have been a really, really tough. Yeah. I mean, hosting it would have been difficult, if not impossible. And then Auburn would have had. I mean, maybe Auburn would have left on Monday for a Tuesday game or something like that. But still, like things were. You know, as someone who spent Wednesday morning of last week in the Atlanta airport, I can tell you, like travel was impacted, you know, across the southeast. So it's another fortunate aspect. On top of the fact that it seemed like the team was ready for a couple of days off, right, and to rest up and heal and recharge for that Tennessee team. I think it would have been tough to play a Tuesday Wednesday game. That team would have been dealing with some of the same problems a lot of other folks were dealing with in the Southeast.
Yeah, so I mean, at least didn't have to do that. I mean, and now Auburn has an extra day. Got three games around the league tonight. We'll take a look at them. The marquee game, without question, is Kentucky at Tennessee. The Vols, after losing that, I mean, that was a heartbreaking loss for them. I mean, they had battled and battled, and the game was just back and forth and back and forth, and they had their largest lead going into the final couple of minutes of the game, up 51-47. Auburn scored the last six, so Tennessee back home with a 4-3 record, taking on a Kentucky team that, man, when they're hot and cold. When they are on, they are as dangerous as anybody in the country.
And while I was struck by the comments from both Zakai Ziegler and Rick Barnes about, and Bruce Pearl for that matter, about I mean, yes, this is a that's a game that it hurts to lose when you're as close as mm-hmm. Tennessee was to winning it, and what that win would have meant. But at the same time, I think playing Auburn that close in a year where Auburn is, you know, at a time when Auburn's the number one team,
they're not going to be satisfied with playing them close.
No, but I don't think you came away from that game thinking you can't beat Auburn.
Oh no, they came away feeling like they should have beaten Auburn.
Exactly, which is a different feeling, but like you're still, I think coming away from that, like there was a way that game could have. Tennessee lost to Florida.
They could not come away from that ball game thinking, oh, we should have beaten Florida.
Right. If Tennessee had been handled right by Auburn in the same in that fashion, you know, it would have been really deflating for Tennessee. Disappointing, yes, that you don't win the game. I don't think that's a deflating loss.
Oh no.
For Tennessee, because I think that's a loss that makes you think we're as good as a team that people think is the best team in college basketball.
Yeah, I don't know that Auburn's satisfied with. I mean, they're very.
I'm not
relieved
saying
that they got the win, but I don't think Auburn feels like they played their best either.
Oh no, I'm not saying it's a guaranteed Tennessee wins a rematch or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like I think Auburn, look, there's character to be shown in coming away with a win. Mm-hmm. If you're Auburn in that scenario, but if you're Tennessee, like it's the point you made initially that it's a game you would have loved to win, and it's a game that it hurts to lose because I think the physical nature of the game also makes it where, like, when you give as much as both teams gave on Saturday night, you know, you'd love to be the victor. But if you're Tennessee, that's a game that you I think you come away from that game, I don't think your belief in your ability to win it all is shaken because you drop a game that goes down to the final seconds at Auburn. Much the same way, Bill, that Auburn's ability to win it all hasn't been shaken because they dropped a game late at Duke. Right? Like, I think there's the realization that it's like, look, there's value in even getting to the point where you're playing down to the wire against a team against a team this good. You want to win. I mean, you're playing these games to win, and there's if you lose, you replay moments in your head. But you know, much the same way that the Duke loss didn't take away anyone's belief that this Auburn team could eventually be the best team in college basketball. Yeah, I would think if you're Tennessee, maybe it's a rosier way of looking at it because it's not your first loss or anything like that. I don't think for Tennessee, you still come away from that game thinking, We're good enough. We're good enough to do it all. To do everything they've set out to do this year.
No, but I mean, as I said earlier, I mean, the loser of this ball game tonight, Kentucky or Tennessee. Now, Kentucky, nobody really knew exactly what to expect in Mark Pope's first year, but Kentucky is 3-3, and Tennessee is 4-3. Now, granted, I mean, see, Tennessee, it's very bitter to them because that Florida game, they had no chance. That's not one you can look back and go, if this, if that. The Vandy loss and the Auburn loss, those are both games they feel like, oh, we should have won those. And they know if they had won those, they'd be the unanimous number one team in the country right now.
And if too many games slip through your fingers, it stops being about, well, we're good enough to play these close games, and it starts being about what's...
You need to start winning those close games.
Yeah, well, you know, why are we... You know, there's only so much value in being better for the first eight innings, right, Bill?
Well, let's see.
Now, don't you need to... Don't they, you?
I'm just looking. They've only had one close win, and that was the win over Texas. Their other wins have been very one-sided. Yeah, let's ask Auburn football fans how happy they are that Auburn played it close last year in football. A few times. Auburn was nearly good enough to win.
Sure.
I mean, that's not what you want. And Tennessee, of course, the expectations much higher for their basketball program this year.
And Tennessee has done some winning on the side.
Oh,
right?
They have.
There are some other
absolutely. But I'm just saying, yes, but when you are there and the expectations are that high, you might be able to shrug. You can shrug off that 30-point loss and go, look, it was just... everything went wrong. It was one of those nights. When you lose by one at Vandy and by two at Auburn, it's like, you know, you feel like we need to make that one play to get us over the hump.
And I'm not even suggesting that Tennessee has a problem closing the games out, because the games have been competitive. It's not like Tennessee's letting these games, although the Vandy game did slip away. Mm-hmm. Like, the Vandy game was a game they probably had, and to an extent, the Auburn game. Right, was a game that...
Well,
that,
a 4-point lead.
Have you ever rooted for a baseball team where the bullpen was the weakness? And so it was things are going well, and then you get into the seventh or the eighth, and it's like, oh, no.
It's not enough. It's not enough. Yeah, that's sort of what Tennessee... That's what Tennessee has to be feeling.
I mean, it's got to... And I don't know if it's... You know, because I don't want to... Yeah, I mean, there's no obvious remedy, right? As far as, you know, how Tennessee, because they're good enough to win these games, but yeah, that's got to be the feeling over there.
Yeah, and like we said, I mean, they've got Kentucky tonight, and then they've got Florida coming in. Fortunately, they have both of these at home, but still, that is a tough week. The other games now. Let's see, that Kentucky Tennessee game is right after. As soon as we get done. 6 o'clock on ESPN. Also at 6 o'clock tonight, South Carolina, the only winless team in the SEC. They've been close, but it ain't horseshoes. But they have been close to beating multiple teams, including Auburn, this year.
And they were in overtime over the weekend, right? Yeah. Against
Florida. They had Florida, and Georgia is a team that, you know, got off to a good start. Made it into the top 25, and now things are going a little tough for Mike White and the Bulldogs. I mean, this is a big ball game for Georgia. I mean, trying to snap a 4-game losing streak.
State had to hit free throws on Saturday.
Yeah, that's right.
In overtime. Right. Florida last week. But it was
a 1-point game that they led the whole game.
Yeah, it's a 1-2 punch to South Carolina. You two games that you feel like, you know, you're close to winning. Not to mention the Auburn game earlier in the month. And for South Carolina, this is probably your best shot at winning a game in the next 5, because they're at Georgia, but they start February home against A&M. At Kentucky, home against Ole Miss, at Florida.
Those aren't nearly as likely, I wouldn't think, as this one, especially while Georgia's reeling a little bit.
Even though it's in Athens, I really like Asa Newell. I don't know if Georgia's got the guard play to beat the best teams in the league.
They're still 11-1. Remember, they've only lost that one home game, and that was to Auburn.
Florida demolished. Florida demolished them. But
Florida's done that a few times. Florida's crushing Tennessee teams. I mean, they have blown some people out. Yeah, Florida is a scary, scary team. All right, 334-321-1390 is the Drive hotline as we get things rolling here in hour number 2. That's brought to you by Skybar.
Yeah, that's right. We can, and we also, you can text the show 334-564-1840 on the Drive text box, presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors, and they are the sponsor of the podcast as well, available wherever you get your favorite podcasts.
Let's get to the Drive hotline, sponsored by Skybar, and Mitch gets us started here in hour number 2. Hey, Mitch.
Hey, guys. Hey, Dan's rarely there, so I wanted to throw some Hollywood, I guess, stuff out for today to him, since he's been out there before. But today is Hawkeye Pierce's 89th birthday.
Oh, is that right, Alan Alda? Or is that the other one?
Yeah, no.
Yeah,
no.
He was Hawkeye. Trapper was the other guy.
Yeah. Trapper's deceased. And he was an Alabama guy, actually. Hawkeye Pierce, Alan Alda, 89 today.
Gotta be honest with you, Mitch. MASH is a bit of a blind spot for me. I've seen the movie.
Wow.
I've seen the movie, but it's been a while, and I've seen very little of the television show. I like a lot of the cast. Love Robert Altman. You know, I can recommend, like, you know it's several Robert Altman movies I really enjoy. I know Alan Alda from some of his other work.
Was really cool was there some of the carryovers that there were from the movie to the series.
Were you a MASH guy? You a fan?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm a huge fan. I mean, I watch it. I watch it every night. I mean, it comes on in the morning on TV Land, and then it comes on MeTV in the evening. So yeah, and also something I didn't realize this, but and this is more for Bill, but John Banner, who played Sergeant Schultz on Hogan's Heroes, today is his birthday, and he also passed away on this day in 1973, which was pretty much less than a year after Hogan's Heroes was canceled in 72 or 71. Maybe it was 71. I can't remember. But
wait, anyway. I missed you for a second. Bob Crane?
Yeah. No. Sergeant Schultz.
Oh,
today
yes.
Today is his birthday.
I know nothing.
Yes. And he also passed away on his birthday in 1973. So he was a young 63. And then also, I can't remember what his name
was. You know, I'm going to be honest with you. I know Bob Crane, and I've seen
Richard Dawson.
And I've seen the movie.
Yeah.
I've seen Autofocus, you know, which again, and I will say, R-rated, parental discretion advised, fantastic, right. Fantastic movie about the later years of Bob Crane's life with Greg Kinnear as Bob Crane.
I have not seen that.
Okay, Greg Kinnear as Bob Crane, Willem Dafoe as his creepy buddy.
Oh man,
right? And then you know, getting into let's call them hijinks. How about that?
Yeah.
But it's until there's a until the
so,
until
so
the
you,
end.
So you, but I don't you know. But I don't know Hogan's Heroes.
But I don't know. Yeah, what I know about Hogan's Heroes, I feel like is more. It gets referenced in the culture.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Well, I mean, that's where you
Colonel
first saw
Clink.
Where you first saw Richard Dawson.
Yes, exactly. From Family Feud, and then the Andy Griffith Show. Otis, the town drunk, passed away on this day in 1994.
Wow!
And and tomorrow, and I remember this when I was in my early teens. But Magnum PI will be 80 years old tomorrow.
Tom Selleck will be 80.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah.
You know, Blue Bloods has been on the air forever, hasn't it?
This is its last. Yeah. It just wrapped up its last show.
Yeah, it's got to be. They got to be. They got to be pushing 16 or 17 seasons of Blue Bloods, I think. Since and he was, and of course he was Magnum, of course,
yep.
and one of the three men with a baby.
Yes, he was.
Right with did you, Mitch? Did you see? Did you see Gutenberg in the news helping with the fire rescue efforts?
Yes, I think I did see that. Yes,
yeah,
I did.
They were
interviewing the guy. Said, "Who are you?" He goes, "I'm Steve Gutenberg."
Yeah, the interview the local newsman Bill during the fires.
Yeah.
It was I didn't see that.
Interviewing a man on the street and talking to him.
Yeah.
And did not realize that it was in fact
and sadly, I mean, we can tie that into Tom Selleck was Mr. Baseball, and of course, Mr. Baseball Bob Uecker just passed last week, so. The real Mr. Baseball.
Right.
And we were just talking Bill and I were just talking about Ted Danson off the air, and Ted Danson is the other.
It's
Selleck, yeah. Gutenberg. By the way, Bill, amazing trivia here. Do you know who directed? Do you know what? Okay. He's better known for, Mitch, you can play too, since you brought up the Hollywood stuff. Better known for his acting, but directed a couple of movies, including Three Men and a Baby. Iconic sci-fi role, iconic character in a sci-fi franchise.
I would guess Leonard Nimoy.
Leonard Nimoy is correct.
That gave that one away. But
yeah.
He directed a few things.
Yeah, Leonard Nimoy directed Three Men and a Baby.
Well, speaking of directors, if you watch the Andy Griffith Show and you know Ernest T. Bass, Howard Morris, he directed a few Andy Griffith shows. Some Hogan's Heroes and maybe something else because I see his name pop up as a director for shows back then in the late 60s, early 70s. So, yeah. You would never think, the character he played in Andy Griffith, as crazy as he was, you would never think that he would be a director. But
I just showed what a good actor he was, Mitch. Yeah.
Yeah. But last thing, Coach Sanda. Did they do anything special for him on Saturday?
Yeah, there was, you know, it was announced, and there was a moment of silence in the pregame, and then there was a picture of him at an empty seat. I mean, you had a plaque of him with the scorebook.
Well, that's great. That's great. Yeah, I didn't realize it. My uncle didn't even know about it. He normally lets me know about things like
that. Yeah, I didn't know about it. I heard about it a couple of days after he'd passed, and I'd known Francis for a long time. And, yeah, really, that's really tough.
Yeah. And, I mean, I went to school with Mike and mm-hmm. Michelle and actually played with him on what's the name? It was Stars Mobile Home, 1982. We were league champions.
Man, Mike was
there. You go.
Mike was just about as sure a thing as there was with free throws.
Oh yeah. I went and saw him at Beardy's when he was in those free throw shooting tournaments or whatever, and I saw all the trophies in his bedroom. And I mean, they were like taller than he was because he kind of he was a short guy. He spouted late in high school because he was always a short guy. But
hey Mitch, since and we appreciate the phone call. Great stuff, Mitch, and I'm glad he brought up the
Francis Sanders.
Yeah, glad he brought the Francis stuff because we've been meaning to talk about that. We're coming up on it, but great. We're coming up on.
We're way behind.
Mitch, I watched Ford versus Ferrari this weekend. Since you were talking about movies, and this is a sports show, it's great. It's fantastic if you enjoy. It's a classic sports movie. Movie stars doing movie star stuff. You know what I mean? With Damon. Damon's sort of doing a Tommy Lee Jones impression as the you know, it's like sort of a cowboy, a cowboyish character as Carroll Shelby, and then Christian Bale's great. Check that out if you haven't seen it.
Guys, all right, War Eagle, we'll talk to you soon.
Take care, Mitch. All right, we'll get to our first break here of hour number two. Don't forget, Jake Crane of Crane & Company joins us at the bottom of the hour, so stick with us here on the Tuesday Drive.
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email thedrive@ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into The Drive here on this Tuesday afternoon. Since we have Jake coming up at the bottom of the hour, I don't think we've got time to run any Bruce. As the Tigers get ready to hit the road for a week, and as we were saying earlier, Dan, I mean, this is one. Andy Burcham was talking about it yesterday, looking like one of those trap-type situations. I mean, such a huge win, game day, and an emotional game, an emotional win with Jahni Broome coming back and playing so heroically and being named the SEC Player of the Week. And now you're going to head on the road for the entire week, and this weekend you're in Oxford, a place where you've struggled anyway, but this is the best Ole Miss team we've seen in a while. Very, you know, very difficult. You have to be very happy to have an experienced team like Auburn does now. But it's still going to be really hard not to still be sort of enjoying the victory or looking ahead to Saturday while you've got LSU tomorrow night down in Baton Rouge.
Yeah, I think we talked a little bit about the battles that the LSU presents, some tough players inside. Mm-hmm. You've got experienced guards, right? Cam Carter is the leading scorer for LSU, and he's a solid perimeter player. Like, this is an LSU team that it's easy to take them lightly because you look and they've struggled in league play, but they've played some good teams close, and that's at home that can make a team dangerous, especially a team that still has some time to mount a tournament push if they turn things around. So I think it's smart for Auburn to be to look at this team and be a little bit nervous about you know, about what kind of challenge they've got on their hands tomorrow night. Even if it does, you know, even if it does seem like Auburn is the better team.
Yeah, and just looking at some of the game notes Marlene has sent out for tomorrow night's matchup, with a win, it would match the best start in Auburn basketball history at 19-1 through their first 20 games. It's only happened a few times. Did happen a couple of years ago in the 21-22 season.
Happened in the late 90s too, right?
Yeah, the Chris Porter 98-99, the 1958-59 season, which that was, remember that was the last time there'd been, the only other time there'd been a ranked matchup, of the magnitude of the Auburn-Tennessee, and then the 1927-28 Tigers are the only Auburn teams that have started 19-1.
So Auburn has had 2 19-1 starts since Beardy's Coliseum opened in the late 60s.
And it had 3 in the rest of its history of basketball.
And if they win tomorrow night, they will have the 3rd.
That's
in
right.
in that run since Beardy's ended. The Tennessee game, this is also from Marlene's notes, the Tennessee game on Saturday, there have only been 2 conference games under Bruce Pearl ever where the opponent scored fewer points. Like Auburn has held 2 opponents into the 40s in league play. Those are both in the 2023 season when Auburn had, I guess, Jabarian Walker. Right when you have had that would have been Janai's first year. That's 22-23.
Yeah.
When Auburn was they held Tennessee to 46. They held LSU to 49 that year. Those are the 2 lowest totals ever. But 3rd on that list is the Auburn defensive performance on Saturday night.
And you know and for the first 25 to 30 minutes of the ball game, I was thinking, anybody hits 50, it's a sure thing win, because it was 22-20 at halftime, and it continued to be an extremely low scoring. Not that 53-51 is high scoring, but comparatively to the first 30 minutes of the game, there were some points scored in the last 10.
Iowa State, Duke, Houston, and Auburn are the only 4 teams in the nation that are top 11 in both offensive and defensive KenPom rating.
Yeah, and gee, surprisingly, not. They're near the top of the polls too.
Those are 4. Yeah, those are 4 of the best teams in the country. Auburn has beaten 2 of those teams, Iowa and Iowa State and Houston, on neutral sites, mm-hmm. and they played Duke at Duke and won. Cooper Flagg is on a tear.
Yes, he
right
is.
Now, and maybe, I mean, when you're talking about, I know the ACC is down. I understand the argument for Janai Broom as National Player of the Year, and I hope it wins out.
It's going to be tough, though, when a guy comes in projected as the top player that was signed out of high school and a possible top draft pick and goes off the way he has been lately.
Yeah, when a guy on a team playing as well as Duke is playing is averaging 20, 25, 9, and 5 or whatever it is, what he did in the most, like that's you know, he's putting a case together too. There's still time for both of them, but you know, we'll see what happens. But Cooper Flagg is on a tremendous run for the Blue Devils.
All right, we'll get to our bottom of the hour break, our weekly visit with Jake Crane of Crane and Company is up when we come back here on the Tuesday Drive.
106.7 online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of the drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email the drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back into the drive here on this Tuesday evening. Bill and Dan here in the studio with Drew at the controls. And it's Tuesday, bottom of the hour here, bottom of the second hour. And that means it's time for us to be joined by our regular guest, one of our favorite guys joining us here at this time. That is Jake Crane from Crane & Company. Hey, Jake, how's it going?
Man, it's going great. Always a pleasure to join you guys. And, man, what a game the other night in Neville.
It was as physical a basketball game as I've been around, as I've been at, in a long, long time. I mean, it's a game that lasted long enough as it is. But if they had called, if they called all the fouls that people were screaming about on both sides, they may still be playing, or there wouldn't be anybody. No, there wouldn't be anybody left to play.
Yeah, that was about as close to a football game on a basketball court as you're going to get. And I will say this: I thought the game was officiated horribly. But if you're going to be horrible for both teams.
Yeah, they were consistently horrible.
It's like an umpire. If you're going to have a terrible strike zone, just have a terrible strike zone for both sides. I'll take consistency and incompetence over inconsistency and malice any day. To me, it's the most impressive win of the season for Auburn.
I was going to say on the officiating front before because I do want to get your analysis on the game, Jake. But to me, the shift from the first half to the second half was dramatic. And Bill mentioned, if they'd called the entire game with a tight whistle, it might have taken 12 hours to play the thing. I guess the counter to that, Bill, would be you hope that maybe with a tight whistle, things would have loosened up and guys wouldn't have played as physical the whole game. But I don't know if that's going to happen in a Tennessee basketball game. That's their brand. But I think it's the rare game where we get the compromise that both teams are understandably furious with the way it was officiated.
Well, how about if it's a foul, you call it a foul? Like, that's my thing. Like, it should just be like a foul or it's not a foul. It's like the same thing in basketball where the ref will wait to see if the ball goes in on a layup to decide whether to call it a foul or not. It's either a foul or it's not a foul. Now, I know it's not as easy as it's not an easy thing to do, officiate a basketball game, but if a guy gets taken out, like there were multiple times where Ziegler and Chad Baker and Denver and they just got taken out and they didn't call a foul. Like, I'm not saying I can be a basketball official or be a great one, but I think I know when a guy gets hit in basketball, probably a foul.
The battle down low. I mean, Janai, and I guess that's where we should start, right? Janai coming back from missing several games, and not just returning, and not just returning and playing serviceable basketball, but returning and being the best player on the floor for a big chunk of the game.
33 minutes, and he didn't play the first couple of minutes of the ball game.
He's putting together one of the best Auburn careers ever, Jake.
Oh, without a doubt. I mean, an absolute warrior. And I think as much credit as you got to give Janai, you got to give Auburn's medical team a bunch of credit, too. I mean, Liam McNeely from UConn sprained his ankle on January 1st, and he still isn't back. So I think there's a lot of credit to go around, but it just shows you how good Janai is, and I think it shows you how good his IQ is to be able to – that's his best strength. You know, he's not the most athletic guy out there. He's not the biggest guy out there. He's just the smartest guy out there. I think his passing ability – is what's going to give him to not only play in the NBA but excel as long as he continues to improve that jump shot and be able to hit three-pointers every now and then. But going back to what I was saying earlier, to me it's the most impressive win of the year for Auburn. You know, it's easy to go out there and feel good and win when you're making shots and you know, you've got a lot of freedom of movement and guys are open and you're getting a good whistle and getting to the line. But it's another thing when your offensive game isn't working and you still have that effort on defense. When your offensive game isn't smooth and you're still out there grinding possessions. I think that's why Bama took Mark Sears out the other night, because he let his offense affect his defense. To me, that shows an unbelievable amount of maturity that you should expect from a team with this many seniors, but it's still not something that you'll see everywhere. So it wasn't pretty, but you got to be able to win games in multiple ways. You know, there's going to be games, guys, in March in that tournament where the three's not falling, where it's going to be ugly, and you got to win a game 61-57. You know, you can't go out there. Offense comes and goes in every sport. It's the same thing in football. Sometimes you got to win games with defense and special teams. In baseball, sometimes you got to win games with pitching and defense. Those are what the great teams do. Those are what the championship teams do.
Yeah, you mentioned Janai's passing ability, and it showed up there on the game-winning play as he finds Miles Kelly, who had made just one – he'd made one of Auburn's only 2 3-pointers in the ball game up to that point. Auburn's 2 for 19 on threes, but Miles Kelly, you know, he's a guy that you want him to go ahead. If he has a look, you want him to go ahead and take it, and he got a good look that time. One of the few good looks that Auburn had after the first few minutes of the ball game.
Yeah, well, with Miles Kelly's shooting ability, he was open the minute he drove into the Auburn city limit. you know, when you... And look, you want your shooters to shoot. I think that shows you the confidence that Coach Pearl puts in these guys. You can miss some and still get a chance, you know, to feel good about yourself going out there and shooting and doing this thing. So, again, you know, I just, the maturity of this team just shows time and time and time again. And at the end of the day, man, I mean, that's all you can ask. In the biggest moment, you made the biggest play and it helped lead you to a victory. I'll say this, too. A lot of people are talking about the Miles Kelly shot, and they should. But Tahad Pettiford making that move and hitting that jumper to put it to a two-score game in that moment was another big-time play from a big-time freshman.
Yeah, and he's consistently the one who wants the ball in big moments. Going back to the Houston game.
Got that dog in him.
Yeah, I mean, he's
got that dog in him.
It's the Jersey City, whatever's in the water there that's got him ready for something really special early in his career. The broom play to get Miles the 3-point shot, like, that was, I think it's a huge play, and it's easy to feel great for Miles, Jake, because in an era of college basketball where guys are on the move for, I don't want to say selfish, but sometimes very individualistic reasons, right? You know, it's a guy like Miles, like, he could have gone somewhere where he's the focus. You know,
he was somewhere where he was the focus.
He had that earlier in his career, and he could have prioritized himself in the portal, and in a way he did, but he's trying to do it. He's trying to win. Like, he's going somewhere where he can do whatever it takes to win, and he's at Auburn where he gets to make big shots in big moments that he wasn't getting to take earlier in his career.
I mean, he's rebounding. You saw him with a double-digit rebound game while Janai was out. He is playing fierce defense. It's not what you would expect from a guy who was the go-to player at another Power 5 school.
He prioritized winning in the portal, and it's great to see that rewarded.
Yeah, and Miles Kelly, it wasn't like he's the guy that's bounced around to three different places. He put in his time at Georgia Tech.
Right.
I mean, he was there for, what, 3 years? And you know, I've heard Coach Pearl talk about it. You know, Coach Stoudemire at Georgia Tech, you know, helped Miles out in you know, picking a place where to go and giving him recommendations, because he did put in that work. And he was a guy that did everything he could. But, you know, it's funny. You say, oh, you're going to go to a place and not be the focal point, and that shows unselfishness. And to an extent, that's true, the way that Bruce divvies up the minutes. But look at all the primetime TV games that Miles Kelly has played. Look at all the – he could average 18 points a game at Georgia Tech and would not get the return on his investment from an NBA standpoint that he's getting at a place like Auburn. Because we're still talking about – you talk about elevating your game. Well, one way to get in front of the scouts the most is to go play for a big-time place in a big-time conference and be put in big-time situations. We're talking about Miles Kelly more now with limited minutes than we would ever be talking about him at Georgia Tech. So at the end of the day, it was a smart business move.
No, you're absolutely right about that, Jake. And, I mean, he has really shown in the big road games especially. I mean, he's shooting well over 50% from three on the road.
But Bill, like, his mid-range game is deep too.
Oh, yes.
Like, he's not one of those just, hey, I'm a 3-point shooter, and all I'm going to do is shoot threes, kind of like the Brea kid from Kentucky. Not that he isn't a good shooter inside, but Miles Kelly can create his own shot, and he's what, 6'6"?
Yeah.
And long, and rebound. He had a double-double the other night, I think, at Georgia,
unless I'm mistaken. Yep.
So, I mean, he's for a 3-and-D guy, he really gets in there and mixes it up, too. I mean, he's got a deep, deep bag.
Now, this one tomorrow night, we were talking with Andy Burcham yesterday, and I mean, this one is a, they're all scary on the road in this league, but I mean, LSU played Alabama really well the other day. You mentioned, Mark Sears not playing the second half. It was tied at half, and LSU only loses by 7, but after such an emotional win over Tennessee in a physical game the way it was, and then you're on the road all week with a trip to Oxford where that has not been a kind place for Auburn basketball through the years, and this is one of the better Ole Miss teams that we've seen in years. This is the kind of spot tomorrow night where, you know, a lot of teams could stumble.
Yeah, and look, Auburn fans need to go and prepare themselves. Auburn is going to lose the game and probably lose multiple games. But
you know, if you could, and you got what, four of the next six on the road, man, if you could find a way to go 4-2 over this span, look at who everybody else plays. Guys, Kentucky and Tennessee are 4-3 and playing tonight.
Yeah.
Bama, you know, I don't think their schedule's been as kind of set up as well as Auburn so far, but you look at the back half of who Bama's got to play, like the last nine games. So the fact that you separated yourself early, and that's why, again, beating the Tennessees and having some of these upsets, right? I mean, Bama's got to go to Mississippi State tomorrow night, and that's not a walk amongst the tulips by any stretch of the imagination. So really putting yourself in this position, it almost feels like you're like a golfer, right? And you're up like two strokes heading into the back nine on a Sunday. You put yourself in position. Now you got to go finish. You don't have to be perfect, right? But you can't let it drop. As far as the emotion going into this next game, that's where I think maybe not shooting well. And, guys, I think a week off affects you in basketball from a shooting standpoint. I really believe it does, more maybe than any other sport from a rhythmic standpoint of you know, shooting well and getting those reps in and game reps and those type things. So I think actually the lack of scoring could end up being a good thing for Auburn. And, guys, LSU played above their skis for a lot of that Alabama game. Can LSU put that type of performance together? But I'll tell you this, that tight end they had that was a freshman that's a really good player, oh boy, can hoop too. So if you're Auburn and you go in there and you play well, you should win the game. You just got to keep LSU off the boards. That's what kind of worries me, because that's where they were beating Alabama up, and that's why Mark Sears really got pulled.
Yeah, it feels like Auburn, and you can say this about a couple of SEC programs, but I think Auburn in particular, like they need to be ready to get everybody's best shot.
When they
go on the road, it would be a season changing win for LSU tomorrow night. They're still, Lenardi put out an update, I think in the last 48 hours, that had LSU as a bubble team based on their total resume. He's got them on the wrong side of the bubble. I think they're in the same boat as Arkansas, where it's like they conceivably have a chance to play their way into the tournament, but their hopes are fading fast. Well, a win over Auburn, and that picture changes dramatically.
It does, but again, it goes back to what I was talking about a couple weeks ago. That means the loss to LSU isn't super detrimental. Like, that's why I'm so glad the SEC is so deep. It's hard to get a bad loss in this league. Like, it's hard to find one.
Yeah, I mean it's a quad one game
right now. Yeah. I mean, yeah, what are you going to sit here? Oh, no, Auburn's really not that good because they lost to a bubble team on the road in the league compared to everybody else in college basketball. It's a slaughter fest out here. So, look, you want to go win every game? You know, Auburn is better than LSU. But to your point, you're going to get their best shot. That's what the top teams do. And the season's not over if you drop one. But, man, I got a decent feeling Auburn's going to go play well. I really do believe that. Chaney Johnson, when the threes start falling for Chaney Johnson, which I think they will, it's just going to add an even bigger arrow in the quiver.
You mentioned the Kentucky-Tennessee game. What's your feeling on that one tonight?
Well, you know, look, Kentucky doesn't have Lamar Butler, and you've heard the name Lamar Butler, and not just at Kentucky. He was pretty good at Houston, I believe, too. And I think Andrew Carr's hurt for him. I mean, Tennessee's 13 flavors of upset after what happened on the road, and they're so good at home. I think this one could actually get ugly, especially if the officials let them play. Like they did at Auburn the other night. We'll see if they do. I'm sure it's a different crew. But I like Tennessee to win tonight. And, guys, the loser of this game between Tennessee and Kentucky is 4-4 in the league. I think if you lose four, you may be out, man.
Oh, yeah. Well, actually, I think Kentucky be 3-4 in the league.
3-4, yeah.
It would be their fourth loss. So, yeah, you're right. It's a big ball game. Hey, we're running short on time. Jake, let everybody know what you got, what's coming up, and how they can access Crane & Company.
Yeah, man, well, we're talking a lot of Auburn basketball as well as we're kind of turning the page to college basketball season. Also talking some NFL. You know, there's kind of a big game coming up here in a little bit. So when, you know, you look for a sports show that talks at all, come hang out with us at Crane & Company. We take live calls. We have a live chat. Easiest way to find us on YouTube or on Roku, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and other places I'm not smart enough to remember. So, yeah, come hang out with us.
Sounds good, Jake. Thanks again, man. Have a great week.
All right. Hey, y'all be good.
Jake Crane joining us as he does Tuesdays. We need to get to our final break of the show right back here on the Tuesday Drive.